Recognized, Uncle Walker, D-0-1. Recognized, Kate Flash, B-0-3.
You guess? The cave was just a place worth sacrificing if it helps us stop the invasion. Look, I'm sorry you lost all your souvenirs.
Are you serious? I don't care about that junk. I'm worried about Artemis, terrified for her. You put her right into his hands.
Wally, we're talking about Calder here.
I know. Calder, our friend, who, in the space of a few months, lost the love of his life and found out Black Manta was his father. Isn't it possible Aqualad might actually be a traitor? A triple agent? He's supposed to be playing them, but are you absolutely sure he isn't playing you?
Today we are ecstatic to welcome Jason Spezak to the cave. Jason's voice has graced many of our favorite shows, including Green Lantern the Animated Series, Star Wars Clone Wars, the LEGO DC Universe, Justice League Adventures, and of course, Young Justice. Jason has helped keep the memory of both Green Lantern and Young Justice alive through his personal YouTube channel.
Sorry, you say the memory of Green Lantern. I'm like, I just want to play Razor.
I know. By sharing his amazing clips, such as Wally reads the classics, sing along with Razor, and the one that made me do what you just did, which was Razor and Wally watch the DC Nation finale. Thanks for that.
Yes.
Punch in the gut.
I did that on purpose.
Oh my God.
I like sharpened all of my knives and then brought them in the studio with me. Just started throwing daggers at the monitor and my keyboard.
Nice.
Like, what is going to happen now? You're all going to cry. That's what's going to happen now.
Jason, yeah. We are honored to welcome you to the cave. Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course, man. Absolutely. And the response to this podcast pre-roll has been overwhelming. Like all the people who jumped on the YJ page, you said.
Yeah, the YJ Sneeds so Season 3 and Wiki and our Twitter account. So fantastic. Thanks so much, guys.
Well, hugs and love to all those people. Appreciate it.
Before we begin, I want to remind everyone that our discussion episodes draw on anything and everything related to Young Justice, including both seasons of the series so far.
So if you don't know what it is, stop listening.
That's right, the comics and the video game. If you've not seen, read, or played all of the material and are spoiler wary, consider this your warning. In this interview, we may spoil any number of other projects Jason has worked on, so keep that in mind. It's funny you should say that because we actually have people who are watching the show for the first time and and listening to our episode by episode breakdown and skipping our the mode spoiler section. And so
that's crazy.
Yeah. And we have a few people we know a lot of people who binged both seasons and then are rewatching it again with us. Yeah. And then we know a handful that are watching it for the very first time with us, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so fun, by the way, to have that luxury here in 2017.
I know,
to
right?
To have the luxury of a whole group of human beings who share an experience and have enjoyed it so much, and then turn around and want to share that with you as you experience it for the first time. I mean, that is the definition of a fandom, and it's like a warm, welcoming embrace, you know, a very, very cool.
Yeah.
I just love our fans. They're so cool.
I know. Our first discussion session was with a friend of the show, Darcy Ross, who was live tweeting her first watch through, which was amazing, because she was like, this Captain Marvel character, is he a little kid? What's happening right now? And we were like, oh my God, you know nothing about anything and you're watching this. And she loved it. It's been an amazing on-ramp for a large number of our fans.
I actually got to do the scratch track for some of Captain Marvel's parts when we were recording.
You know, actually, we were going to ask that as well. There's a weird, I don't know if it's a rumor or IMDb. Did you voice Billy or did you not?
Yeah, there was one small moment when I got to voice Billy, and it was just like one or two, you know, moments. I didn't think they were going to leave it in or let it stick, but I don't know if they did in the end or not. I can't remember because I'm not there for post-production. So I was like, whatever you guys want to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Whatever you guys want to do, just do it. Okay, great. All right.
So we normally ask our discussion session guests, like, when did you first see Young Justice? Now, that clearly doesn't apply. So can you tell us the story of
when the episode first came out?
Exactly.
I sat on the couch.
Exactly.
And I watched myself. Today's the day. Yeah.
Can you tell us the story about how you got the parts of Wally and Razor, for that matter?
Yeah, sure. The auditions come through the pipe, and usually you're reading them in your home studio. So you're trying to glean what it is that they want out of the character. And so when I saw this, you know, the Kid Flashness come across my desk or my virtual desk, I was so excited because there's an energy and an authenticity and just a fun-loving, you know, goofball nature to this superhero. And anytime you get to play a superhero with that bent, what a treat.
So
I read for Robin and I read for Kid Flash, and they called me back to read The Callback, which was the producers. Greg and Brandon were in there, and Jamie Thompson, the voice director, was in there. And I went in for Kid Flash, and they showed me the artwork for the first time. Sometimes when you audition, you get artwork, and sometimes you don't. So in my home studio, there was no artwork. I was just throwing eggs at the wall. And then I had the luxury of Phil Barassa's drawings. So if you think about that as an actor, what a luxury, right? So here, you not only get to see kind of the other characters and the style of them, but they're showing you your character in relationship to them. And here's Wally with the pads, you know, like, because he runs into stuff and can't quite stop. And there's all those delicious justifications that Phil has given in the past about that.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love. I was like, I love this dude. This is amazing. Yeah. And I think I took that into the booth with me. They could tell that I was completely, you know, in love with Wally's sense of humor and his who he is as a person.
Yeah.
And I think they also saw in my portrayal, because often, you know, I'm loathe to do caricatures. I love to do stuff that takes things to a new place, but they have to be an honest and a real new place.
Yeah.
So there was something else I brought to the role that Greg and Brandon had mentioned this to me, that there was a tenderness, there was a bit of a vulnerability under all of that. Right? And it's because he's doing that stuff because he's vulnerable. And it's because he ends up, you know, showing how he feels about kids, and he ends up in cold-hearted, you know, behaving these ways that makes him a true hero because he's human. And what better force to engage an audience than the humanity of a person who is more than human?
Absolutely.
And that's what I brought to it. So it was that love and that joy and that openness and of course the energy. I mean, you know, Wally's energy is very unique. inches above sizzling death, I'm entitled to speak my mind. Like, it's just so...
That was not a cut-in by us, by the way. That was actually Jason, just so you know.
Yeah, that's me. I'll burst into Wally and stuff anyway. And then Razor, very similarly, believe it or not, no artwork when I read it. I'm not about to debate this with a computer. Go back to whatever hard drive you call home and bother me no more was like the lines. I don't know if that line ever made it into the series, but that was the audition lines. And I just loved his personality and his backstory.
Yeah.
Whoa, I was like, with this backstory, oh, I love this juicy stuff. You know, being a Shakespeare fan, I love the layers and the thickness of humanity. And then I got called back, and Bruce Timm, the creator of Green Lantern, was back there, and Giancarlo Volpe was in behind the booth, and Elisa Schaefer was the voice director on that one. I came in to do the callback, and I was just possessed. Like, I loved Razor so much in his anger and his sarcasm because it was hiding pain.
Yep.
And we do that. We as humans all do that. We have gallows humor. We have, especially these days, so much to be worried about and so much that we're sad for, and yet you can't live life that way. So you have to put something on top of it. And for Razor, it was sarcasm and rage and, you know, a sense of hopelessness, which then becomes hope in a full circle, aka a ring, for his story.
Exactly.
And that it was so attractive to me as an actor. And I literally, I was screaming at the mic in the callback. I mean, I was going nuts. You know, I mean, I went off the chain. You'll have to ask Giancarlo if you ever interview him for anything.
I will. So you're speaking about these characters kind of, it feels like a mix of like with familiarity and not familiarity. What was your history with comics before you started reading these?
I had very little history with comics. I mean, I read comics when I was a kid, but I didn't fall in love with them and they weren't my thing. The reason was because by the time that it was time to get into comics, video games were nascent. So I spent much more time on the NES than I spent in a comic book. And while I played D&D and things like that, and MechWarrior on paper, when, you know, any chance I got to do video games, I mean, Coleco, Atari, Nintendo, whatever, all that stuff, I was very drawn to the electronic version of things. So, you know, and of course I grew up watching cartoons, you know, like Thundercats and things like that. So I was more of an interactive show me type of personality. And so I didn't have the romance that I honestly think I miss a little bit, because there's so much work coming out of comic books these days as voice actors begin to create these characters for all of us. And I think I'm a little upset by the fact that I didn't have that romance and that love in my childhood. But that doesn't stop me from reading the comics and, you know, going into them for a little bit of research here and there and things like that. But there's also something about a character on the page which is not exactly like the character in the comic book. So if you ever talk to Greg and Brandon about that, they don't completely honor, you know, the comic book in some ways. They change things to tell the story. So that may be an advantage. I don't know. And Razor doesn't exist in the comic books, but he should.
Yeah. Well, that was a question I was going to ask a little later, but I'll bring it up now. Like, the Wally that you're playing and the Wally that Michael Rosenbaum played in Justice League as well, both of those Wallys have kind of, I'll say, female-centric personalities.
Sure.
But both of those Wallys are nothing like the Wally in the comic. The Wally in the comic has been with his, you know, wife, Linda Park, forever.
Right.
So he's not really that kind of personality.
Well, I wanna make a distinction about that, because being into women or trying to impress them, all that is, if you don't have a steady girlfriend, is just the underlying exposing of an insecurity or a, you know, I need people to look at me. I need people's outward affections. There's just that.
Yes.
That, and all that is if you take Wally and throw him in a story where he doesn't have a steady, that's how it exposes itself. He's kind of always looking for a steady, or looking for somebody to steadily laugh at him, whatever the choice may be, which is what makes the story of his introduction to Artemis so wonderful. Because when you're looking for love, you're looking wrong. But when it finally finds you, that's the only kind it can be. And that
that
makes it that much more powerful. Like, he has to forget his relationship with her to have a relationship with her. He has to forget that he hates her and her him. Because under the surface, they're both caring. They just have a lot of stuff going on. So anyway, sometimes I think that the divergence from the comic books is great, because you can tell a fresh story with the same characters, and DC has that flexibility. It's amazing. Like, I play Lego Joker, which is nothing like, you know, Joker in the comics. You know, it's, you know, he's not a murderer per se. It's Lego. But all of the key tenets of the person, all of the key tenets of who that character is as a human, have to be honored, and they have to exist.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a different set of circumstances.
Right, and we talk about that on the show a lot. The idea that when a movie or something comes out and fans are not a fan of the movie, the first reaction is typically somebody saying, "Oh, well, you don't like it because it's not like the comics." It's like, well, you have these characters. Robin is an 80-year-old character.
Well, and then you have to also say, which Robin? I mean, like,
exactly.
Don't play that game with me, because there are different human beings, you know, behind the mask.
Exactly. And so the idea that comic readers don't know that characters evolve over time and change is completely ridiculous. Yeah. But there is a heart to Dick Grayson, and there's a heart to Wally that you can change around.
Right.
Like, the Wally that you play is a hero. He's this genuine hero. And the heart of Wally as a character is the idea that he loves what he does.
Sure.
He doesn't have the trauma that Dick has. He's got a loving family who knows who he is and what he can do. He's got Barry. He's a different kind of character, as opposed to, say, you know, like I said, like Dick, you know, the leadership qualities of Dick are there. If you take those away, then it's not really Dick.
Right. And you can put him in a variety of circumstances, which the comic books already do. And every time they reinvent him for a 52 or whatever the case may be, they're working with that archetype, but they're reinventing the circumstances under which that archetype was going to exist. And that's legal. Tell everybody, like, hey, that's legal. The reason why these stories are so engaging is, and they will hold up over time, is because they can be constantly reinvented.
Exactly. Absolutely. I agree 100%. And so even though the Wally that you and Michael played is different than the Wally necessarily in certain personality traits and ways, that doesn't mean that the heart of that character is not 100% solid. If they had made Wally like a somber emo guy, then it's not Wally, right? That would be ridiculous, right? That's because great. The character of Wally from the comics is this.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Like, no, it's not going to happen. The joke isn't the same.
Not quite the same. No. Not quite the same. So I think that we can, I mean, you'd mentioned this earlier before, you have a love of Shakespeare, and we see you do this with Wally reads the classics.
Right, right, right.
So you're clearly, and you said you're a Shakespeare fan, so did you have an aim to shoot at stage theater first before doing like voice acting and TV? What's that story?
You know, not really. I never thought of myself that I would be big in the theater, but I'm a classically trained actor, and when you do classical training at a conservatory like Syracuse University, where I went to school, and that's the type of training you get. You get literature, mm-hmm. classic literature, and bringing it to life and looking into the intricacies of those characters. And so that's the basis for my, you know, acting education. And that does have a lot of pluses because those characters are very complex. You know, in the older literature, you do find incredible complexity of character that today a lot of things get whitewashed. You lose a lot of the humanity. And so to me, it's very important that every time I take the vocal stage, as it were, that I'm honoring a level of humanity that I just traditionally see. It helps me that right. Greg Wiseman is a Shakespeare fan because he kind of sees things from that point of view. So when I talk to Greg about something having to do with the character or whatever, we have that in common, and we want to bring that to the forefront, that complexity and that, you know, that humans just are not on the surface what they are.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
From Shakespeare, the love of that language, that if you can bring that language to life, is my opinion, that if you can bring that type of language to life, then you can act anything. Because if you can make people feel what you're feeling in a English that isn't even English to people now, mission accomplished.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're truly showing them what you're feeling. It's not about what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that to me makes the most complex characters. That you know Razor's in pain when he's saying something, and it's not what he's saying that hits people. You know, it's his circumstance. It's who he is. It's what's underneath the surface. And that's the delicious complexity that thankfully in 2017, you know, in 2012, we can bring to cartoons. That never used to have that.
Yeah,
that cartoons have become a medium where that is at home.
So speaking of that classical theater, I heard you talk a few times about the physicality, the importance of physicality for in voice acting.
Right. How do I...
Does that come from the theater background too?
I think it does.
Or is that just, do you think that's a quality of your personality?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like I was always very good at talking with my hands and doing this sort of thing just generally. But the problem is when you get to theater, some of that can be a liability because in theater, they don't like you to have wasted movements. They call those clowning.
Oh.
So you're not presenting like you're feeling something. You have to be authentic. So if you have any repetitive gestures or anything, they try to, you know, take out what's not part of the character and only keep what is. But yes, I think it is a tell in a way because that's how I learned to create characters very outwardly.
Right.
And so I do find that when I do voices, and I'd said this on another podcast, that I do have physical triggers that help me establish where that character is sometimes. And if you watch my physicality in the booth, if I'm playing different characters, like I play 9 voices in an online, you know, the Elder Scrolls Online, for example, and my physicality is very different. My physicality is very different for different characters. You can't help but notice. You don't have a chance, right? That's nothing like Wally. So he's not, you know, moving around lightly from moment to moment. And so, yes, physicality... So it can sometimes be my anchor. And I think the further away it gets from me, like who I am, Wally's, you know, me with the dial turned a few degrees, Razor's me with the dial turned a few degrees the other way, you know, and the closer that I am to myself, probably the less I need that. But the farther away we get, like Chum Bucket in Mad Max the game is a hunchback. And so I'm literally bent over every, you know, time I'm doing it.
You're telling me you're nothing like Chum Bucket, is what you're saying?
Physically, yes, in appearance only.
But in order to do this sort of thing, I almost have to do that, Saint.
I have to, like, I almost feel like my body wants to lean forward when I do that. When we did when we did the ADR for that game, I was sitting in the chair in the booth, but I told them, look, I got to have some of the physicality for this guy to keep him home. So the way the chair was positioned, the mic was positioned, it allowed me to kind of lean over and simulate the fact that I was hunched over. So I wouldn't have to be literally standing hunched over for an entire, you know, 4-hour session.
Right.
But it was definitely there. I was hunched over in a chair, like a hunchback. So yeah, I would say it does serve, it's utilitarian.
Yeah, exactly. So with the character of both Razor and Wally, there seems to be a bit of a glimpse of you getting typecast as the character who almost gets the girl.
So tell me, when does Chumbucket almost get the girl? Well,
I don't know. Is that true? I'm trying to find that out. Is that true?
I think there is a vulnerability that people see in me. And that vulnerability, it's fun to hurt them. I mean, as a writer, it's fun to make the audience empathize with the character and then turn around and life happens. Life plays upon us and then there is suffering. And that makes for good stories. So I think there is something to that because it's no fun to hurt a character that you hate. It's only fun to, I mean, that can be, and sadistically, I guess. But, you know.
Different kind of fun.
But it's a different type of cartoon then. If you're like, ha ha ha, look, the bad guy is getting hurt or whatever, that's different. But if you're like, oh no, my hero is in emotional turmoil, that just grounds you so much more to the story. And that has its uses. So I think, I basically will forever play the hero that doesn't get the girl. I mean, Lux, Wally, Razor, I don't know.
Wally got the girl.
Yeah, but he doesn't get to keep the girl.
I guess that's
he dies. So, spoiler, you haven't seen the show.
I was looking at the positive side. Thanks for tearing me down, Chase.
You're welcome. That is my job. My job is to tear you down and build you up only to tear you down again. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Lux, too. Lux and Clone Wars.
My job is to say, tell Mom and Dad. Just tell them, will you?
God,
like I literally, I do that in front of people. They're like, oh, don't get me started on Artemis. You know, like, and they just go, stop. Like they have a visceral reaction. They're like, stop. You're not allowed to do that in front of me. And
I know that's just mean.
It's horrible.
And awesome.
But
it's
right. Both. That the story, you can be so invested in it that all you have to do is hear the voice saying the lines and you're taken right back to that horrible moment. It's a testament to everybody who produced the show, the musicians, the creators, the animators, the writers.
Yep, everybody. So you have three girls? Is that correct?
I have two daughters.
Two daughters. How do they react to you being part of these shows? Do they watch these shows? Do they have friends who are fans?
My daughters love Artemis, of course, to the point where my youngest got a green bow, and practiced archery because they just loved the strong, not going to take any crap nature of the female heroes, which we sorely need more of for our young women to become the women that they will be in our society that is strong and not going to take any crap. And they loved that aspect of the series and the whole thing. They binged watched it. She's not binge watching that anymore, to this day. But when season 3 comes out, they heard there was a season 3, and their first question is the same question that everybody has is, so are you going to be on it again?
Right.
And I'm like, first of all, I can't tell you, because even though you're my child, I'd have to kill you. But.
Right. Sure. That's fair.
You know.
Part of the contract.
Grab your bow and defend yourself, young Artemis, because I'm going to have to kill you. So, unfortunately, I can't say a word about it. I'll be excommunicated from the island. And you're not allowed to do that. That's sacrosanct, especially when the writing is so good and Greg and Brandon are creating something amazing.
Yeah.
I did get to go into their offices and look at the wall and look at how they're creating this story and just mind blown. So you guys are going to really be in for a treat. But I can't say anything about it. So.
No,
and
that's
I can't even say
fair.
That I'm on the show. I just happen to know them, so I went to their office. I was like, can I at least see what's going on, please? Because I'm in the dark.
You see what all the cool
like
kids
an
are
actor,
doing?
And nobody tells me anything. So everybody thinks I know stuff, but I don't know stuff.
That's perfectly fair. We appreciate that.
Sure.
Well, to focus a little bit more on Young Justice, at least for the parts you can talk about. So was the process for recording Young Justice different than any of the other shows you've done? Like, I've heard you talk about the camaraderie working on the show, sure. and Crispin mentioned recording in a studio with other people in the same space, and sure. he said that's kind of unusual in some ways.
It is, especially if you do a lot of gaming work. They really just let you record alone. And that's sad because actors are interactive creatures. The nature of what we do is to play off each other. And so for Green Lantern, the animated series, a lot of the original animated series I've been on have let us record all together. I mean, from Rocket Powered on Nickelodeon, nice. We recorded all together. And then Young Justice, we recorded all together. Green Lantern, we recorded all together. Now, they do have to stagger the recording sessions, otherwise it will get too many people in the booth, or schedules permitting, sometimes you record with two or three people who have scenes with you, but not the other six that have the other half of the story. It brings something to the work, period. Anybody who says that you can work alone and get the same amount of, you know, level of performance is lying, but it doesn't mean they don't do a good job. It doesn't mean they don't do an amazing creative job. It just means to me, you don't know what someone else is going to do. And there's that spontaneous creativity that you miss. And every actor I know enjoys that. We just don't have the luxury all the time.
Right. It's just you're feeding off of the energy of the thing that someone else is creating so that it's a cooperative effort.
Or in the case of me and Stephanie, you're just kissing them. Those are also very valid. Yeah. Those are also very valid things. And I'm always lobbying to kiss anyone.
So speaking of kissing people, can you share the story about how that Artemis Wally kiss?
Right.
That was awesome.
Right. I can't believe people don't actually haven't heard this story yet. But if they haven't, here's some joy to put in your hip pocket. We got to that episode where they kiss on New Year's. And it was a strange setup. They had me and Stephanie next to each other, which sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. And Superboy and Megan were next to each other over there on the other side. And we get through the script, we're doing the thing or whatever, and we get to that scene, and then Jamie Thompson, the director, said, the voice director says, okay, Jason, you can go over there and get on Stephanie's mic. And I'm like, oh, crap. So, no, you're laughing. But this is how naive I was. I was like, oh, okay, so there must be a problem with my microphone. Because I thought maybe they had a technical issue. And I'm like, oh, it's cool. I mean, Eric is the engineer. I'm like, oh, it's cool, Eric. Don't sweat it. I'll use Stephanie's mic. Because sometimes if there's not enough people or there's too many people and not enough mics, you share a mic, right?
Okay.
So it's not unheard of that you would share a mic with another performer. And I thought it was just a technical glitch. Right. I'm like, yeah, cool, no problem. So I go stand over there next to her. I'm like, okay, you do your thing and then I'll step up and I'll do my thing, right?
Right.
And then Jamie goes, no, just go ahead. And Stephanie and I look at each other, we're like, go ahead. Go ahead what? And she got about six shades of red, and I think I turned puce, if that's even a color, I don't know. And we became like 12 years old right then. I was like, you want a kiss? Like, it was so juvenile all of a sudden. And so we do the thing. We do the lip lock or whatever. I mean, she was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. She's like, Mom, I'm all right. You have to tell her husband. She had to, you know, she was worried. She's like, no one can ever tell him this because he's like a 20 millionth degree black belt in Krav Maga. And I'm like, okay, I wasn't thinking that I was going to die. I was just like, I get to kiss the girl. That's all that was on my mind. Not the impending death or dismemberment afterwards, obviously. So so we do the deed, and I'm like, you know, I wasn't feeling it. I think we need another take. And she slapped me, you know, and we did it again anyway, because I'm all about perfection.
Of course.
So, yeah. It was incredibly silly.
That's so
funny.
But
they wanted that because they wanted the authenticity. And they've kind of always been after that emotional realism. I'm very proud that they are always after that as a goal.
Yeah.
Because,
absolutely,
you know, the consequence is me getting to kiss Stephanie Lemlin, which hopefully she'll hear this broadcast, and she always just is like, Jason, stop. I love Stephanie and her babies. I was over there to her house to see her beautiful children she has now, and they're just amazing. She has twins, plus, I mean, it's just amazing. Their family's amazingly beautiful.
I saw you guys do a video interview with a YouTube interviewer, and your friendship and your the chemistry between you two,
yes,
just really comes across.
It's very real.
It really helped to come across in the show as well, even when you guys were at your, you know, the characters were at each other's throats.
She's acting because she really hates my guts, but it's no, it's
fair.
Very real. It's very real.
It's fair.
Yeah.
So did you know that they were going to become a couple? When did you find that out? Crispin said he didn't find out
that
he was
totally
the mole
surprised.
Until the end.
Yeah, it was a totally was really? Total surprise. And they do that on purpose. Like, until you read the script, you don't know. They're not telling you anything. They're not giving you the arc because they want you organically not to do anything in the preceding episodes to betray any of that, unless they gently guide you to a place where they want you to hide something or they want you to whatever. You know, they'll tell you have a secret, but they won't tell you what it is. Depending upon how instrumental it is, you know, if you have to play it, they'll tell you why you have to play it, because the character knows. But, you know, I had no clue. I literally had no clue. And the episode where we lost our memories with Simon, I read that episode and I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, they forget that they hate each other, but I didn't realize that was the start of Spitfire.
Right.
And then
yeah.
when I'm in the Tower of Fate with Kent, and you're like, seeing how he says, find your own Spitfire, you know, and you're like, wow, okay, I think I know where they're headed with this, because Megan is not interested in me at all.
A Spitfire.
No matter what I do. But she's my spark plug. And that was about the time where it started to dawn on me that where they were headed, I think.
Nice. Yeah. So that, I am assuming, also applies to Wally not making it out of season two.
that was
going to happen.
That was the day I got that script. Basically, I read, you know, the end of season two, read that script, cried, told Brandon and Greg they're bastards, but that I love them. Because I said, you guys have such huevos. You have the hugest balls on you, because this is what has to happen. This is what has to happen to tell this story the way it has to be told. That these young superheroes coming of age, you don't come of age without collateral damage. You don't come of age without losing someone you love. That's the definition of living this life as an adult. And so for Artemis to cross into that, she, you know, was one of the main focuses of season two, the storytelling and the complexity of her life. If you're focused on that, she has to lose Wally in order to stay true to the tone of the show. And they apologized to me. They both walked up to me when I came into the recording session, and they both went, oh, man, we're sorry. We're so sorry. I just, you know, and I went, don't be sorry. Guys, I get to be immortalized as a cartoon character for kids who dies. That never happens. Are you kidding? Thank you so much for the honor to think that I could have made this many emotional deposits in the bank for you to make this withdraw. Otherwise, it would seem hollow, but it didn't. So it was a credit credit to me. And I really told them, you know, don't sweat it, you bastards, for killing me. I hate you forever, and I'll kill all your children. So,
The scene right after that really puts it home on top of it is Artemis standing outside of Wally's house with his parents.
Yeah.
And how they didn't say anything. And we talk about this in the show a lot too, the way that the writers and the directors know what not to say.
Yes.
It's you know what I mean? When they're animating these things, her just breaking into tears and watching. Yes. I'm sorry, I'm losing it right now myself.
No, but that is what makes it real. See, to me, it's a cartoon often is too busy showing people things. And Greg and Brandon are not afraid to not show people things, but to let them think about what's happening on screen. And that scene makes Wally's death. It's a scene with no dialogue. And I told them that when we were there. I was like, you guys wrote this after scene. I see it here in the script. This is what makes the season. And they're amazing at that.
Unbelievable. Yeah, no kidding.
Stop talking about this moment. You've brought it up twice. I've had enough of you.
All right, let's switch.
I've had enough of you.
Let's talk about Wally. So Wally matured, obviously, quite a bit, particularly between seasons one and season two, as did all of the characters. So how did you approach that change? Did you change his psychology, like the psychology of how you played him from season one to season two,
course.
Or even during season one?
Well, there was evolutions in his psychology, which we call in the biz a character arc. And
right,
you
of
have to honor that through the vocal performance and everything, because in season two, now he has something to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, think of that. Like in season one, especially for like the first three quarters of that season, like he's got nothing to lose. He's Wally, you know, doing his thing. But you bring on season two and he's at home with the woman that he loves more than anything. In the back of your mind has to be that this is dangerous. That's why he gets so upset at Dick. I mean, because he, for the first time in his life, has something that he cares more about than himself. And that's a huge difference. So yeah, obviously there's steps. He's still Wally, but there's that bit of growing up. Anytime you fall in love, you now care about someone to the same measure that you once cared for yourself. So it's or more. So
yeah,
you have to honor that in the vocal performance and everything. And of course the pitch is a little lower. These are mechanics, but.
Right. Well, feeding on that as well, you kind of touched on this a little earlier. You were doing Razor and Wally both around the same time.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah. And Lux. I mean, I did all three of them in one week.
Oh, jeez, that's right.
Actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Ahsoka, you're ruining my plans.
So with Wally and Razor, obviously very different personalities, yet there is something that kind of feeds into both of them, particularly Wally in season two.
Right.
With that scene you're talking about where he's yelling at Dick, we actually use it as a bumper at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, well, lucky audience. They got to hear that. You guess? I mean, it's so intense. Yeah.
It's so good. And it also shows their friendship, which is another thing, too.
Because you can't get that kind of mad at a thing that you know means something unless you're a friend. Because you can get mad at shallow things.
Exactly.
Like, you know... Dude, you bogarted the shake. Like, but you can only get so mad about things for someone you're not friends with. But it's only at that point where you can let down your guard. And we never see Wally mad. Everything rolls off his back, you know. And that is the level of meaning that is required in that moment. Because he loves Artemis and is scared he'll never see her again. Which would kill him.
And I think that's why Dick reacts the way that he does, too. Where he's like, I'm sorry you lost your stuff. Right? And because Wally projected this air of that, right? And this new side of Wally might be something that has always been there that Dick just hasn't quite seen yet.
Sure.
You know, until that moment. And then he gets it in the face.
Well, and it's also one of the things of being a leader, right? You have to make the tough decisions. You don't have the luxury of feeling, in a way, of being that vulnerable, which is why, think about it. I mean, you know, Dick's evolution, his mentor is Batman, who's the ultimate leader who doesn't feel anything. So in that moment, if Dick would have been like, I'm so sorry, dude, like that would have been a betrayal of who Dick is, who he's becoming, and who he needs to be.
Dick's always walking that thin line between the fact that he got the closure to his history that Bruce never really got.
True.
In the series. So like the way I describe Bruce as a leader is people do things because if you don't do what Batman tells you, that's stupid, you know? But when Dick is a leader, Dick is a leader because people love Dick and know that Dick loves them and they want to do what Dick is saying. And that's a very different kind of leadership.
Incredibly so. But yet you can't deny the influence of the leader he learned how to be from a man who doesn't feel.
Right. And then the same thing reflects on Calder as well, because Calder's mentor is a king of men, right? A king who leads armies, right?
Right,
so he's
a real king. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So did the Razor, Wally, and Lux kind of thing you're all doing at the same time, did that make each of their personalities more like interesting? Did it play off of each other in any way?
No. Absolutely. You have to honor the script that's in front of you. You have to honor the moment that's in front of you. So if you're ever doing summer stock theater or anything where you're playing multiple characters at the same time every other night, you must honor the story. And everything else is immaterial. You as an actor are merely a tool. I'm such a tool. Like, I couldn't, you know, live with myself if I got these incredible opportunities to work for Lucasfilm and to work for Warner and DC and and didn't keep them as separate as possible and their own stories as individual as possible, and in my head completely unclouded every time I stepped to the mic to be each one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it was easy. The writing was also very good. I trust my writer. That's usually, Shakespeare teaches you that you must trust the writing. It's there, yeah. It's on the page, it is truth, you honor what's there. And if you do that, and you can trust fall into the writer's lap, you can accomplish something great.
Nice. I love that. Well, we do have some questions that were specifically from, we have our Patreon backers.
Sweet! I love Patreon. It brings content creation to the place where it should always have been. It's evolving towards direct patronage of the people who want to consume the art.
I am a big fan of supporting the people that I love on Patreon as well. Like, it's just a great way to just tell them, give them a hug,
right?
Basically, and say, I love what you do. Just keep doing what you, just keep doing you.
Sure.
You know?
Buy some underwear with this money.
Or, you know, soap or whatever.
Yeah, forget underwear. You're a podcaster. You don't even need to take a shower. But here, buy these Cheetos.
Or
they're
pants.
Delicious. Eat another bag for me. Keep recording, you stinky underwearless bastard. You free-balling nut job, keep recording. I love what you do. Here's a dollar.
I can't actually get to the questions.
No, that's my job. Interviewees generally have a hard time juggling my balls. I don't know what I'm saying there. It's a metaphor. It went sideways on the road and exploded like an IED. I apologize to everyone in advance for the exploding IUD. Go ahead. Continue. I think I've lost him. I think he needs a bag.
Well, this all segues beautifully into our first question, which was, Wally's humor feels very natural for him. Awkward, but natural.
Yeah, sure.
And the question was, were you allowed to improvise any lines or add your own spin to what was on the page? Or how did you put...
I think they mostly told me to shut up and say the lines. I really think that there was a point at which they were like, are you done yet, Jason Spezak? Are you done talking? It's time to record, you jackass. I really think they stopped me from improvising. There was little things here and there. But again, Greg and company are such brilliant writers, and Greg and Brandon would guide the writers, you know, to ultimately tell a story that had that in it anyway. It had Wally's sort of off-the-cuff sense of humor, and as an actor, just to honor that and make it real was enough. It didn't need ad-libbing. There are some shows that you're on that desperately need an ad-lib, but Young Justice is not one of them. It's also tightly written, so you have to be careful about what you say because they reference everything in a circle.
Yes,
you know,
they do.
You can't go too far astray.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and thanks for making me get serious again. I think it helped the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for letting me breathe.
Sure. A bag is only a dollar on Patreon. Get rich a bag. It's a paper bag. It's only a dollar. Take your 40 ounce out of that bag and send it to him.
The next question's from one of our listeners who is a Kid Flash super fan. Her name
sweet.
Is Faith.
Yay. Hey, Faith. As Kid Flash would say, sweet.
She asks, did you relate to Kid Flash in any way? Did that affect your performance? Like, were there aspects that you found easier to do or parts that you found more difficult because you had nothing in common with Wally? You seem to have answered or at least nodded to that a little bit, but can you unpack it?
As a human, I find it next to impossible with all the realm of human experience and imagination to completely fall short of identifying with your character. That would be a failure of me as an actor, to lack the imagination necessary to say, what would it be like if Jason had these life circumstances? What would it be like if my fiancé got killed while I was off in a war zone, aka Razor? What would that be like? Has that happened to me? Hell no! I mean, you know, but do I know what that's like, and do I possess the imagination to put myself there realistically? We all possess the imagination to do that. We had it as children. We didn't have any trouble buying into playing in the sandbox or buying into pretending to go on military maneuvers or whatever it was you did as a kid, playing with dolls or anything. You bought into that. Legos for me.
Yeah.
100%. And it was real, and you told the stories, and you became each character, and there was no lack of commitment or imagination.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why you can't continue that for the rest of your life and be childlike in that aspect. It's there. You simply have to uncover it and let it breathe. So, yes, Wally and I feel like I bond with all my characters in some way. I can't do one without that. I mean, like even Justin Hammer, who's a huge douchebag, you know, in Marvel. I mean, this is like a DC podcast, so to even mention that is sacrilege. But
we talk about everything.
It's definitely a different type of character. He's just a straight up, there's nearly no redeeming qualities to that guy whatsoever. But you can't play a character pointing at them. You have to be them. And so, yes, yeah. I think there's a lot of similarities between me and Wally. Just generally speaking, it's kind of nice to play a character who's pretty close to you on the dial. And I think there's a lot of similarities between us. So it helps. Nice.
So another one of our listeners wanted to ask if you're going to do any more Wally and Razor YouTube pieces.
Well, I have to be very careful about that. And the reason is because of the action that was going on with season 3 and the whole binge Netflix and the whole thing. I had chatted with Brandon at dinner a couple times, and I said to him, you know, what do you think about this stuff? You know, because I was keeping it alive when there was no hope, you know. Mm-hmm. But now that there's hope, he's like, it's best to just let things happen the way they're going to happen, because you don't want to influence things either way. If we have a chance to bring this story back, you should honor it. You should, you know, don't do anything. You might mess it up. So the answer to that is I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Okay.
I really wanted to do more Razor stuff, because there really seems to be no hope, no ring jokes, no pun intended, but there really seems to be, the ring has flown for Razor, I think, sadly, unless there's some way to binge him on Netflix, but I don't even think they're on Netflix anymore. I don't think GL Toss is.
They're not. I don't think they are. I think maybe Hulu's picked up some. Hulu has Batman the Animated Series now for some reason. They used to be on Netflix, so I don't know what battles those two are going at.
Sure. So will there be more? My love making YouTube content. It's also a matter of time. Like if I'm, like I told you before, I'm like, if I'm home, I just want to be with my daughters so they know I'm alive and then, you know, go to sleep. But
Right. So you're telling people just be patient. It'll probably
I can't expect people to be patient. I mean, that's the definition of a fan.
Oh, that's
It's
fair.
Like I need more content yesterday.
Yes.
So I can't, yeah. I'm not going to blame anyone. I'm just not going to do anything about it. There's a large difference there. I'm a man of action. But just not today.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Somebody else asked, are there characters who appeared in Young Justice in the first two seasons that didn't have speaking roles that you might like to do the voice of if they appear in later seasons, say if Wally doesn't come back?
You know,
like the Hawks, the Hawkman and Hawkwoman didn't have voices.
I have
voices
to be honest, I would love to do anything that Greg and Brandon co-create. I mean, they could co-create a commercial for socks, and I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd be like, these are the best socks ever. I would do whatever. So yes, and of course that would mean they'd be in the DC universe. So duh. Mm-hmm. Jason, would you like to play this character in the DC universe? I'm sorry. Is the answer to that question ever no? Like what? On what planet did you exist that it's a no because you're an idiot? So I know I would always be happy to do anything related to both of those things. So
we'd be happy for that too.
Oh gosh. Plus it would give me a chance to do something different, which I always love. I love creating voices no one's ever heard before.
That's awesome. Another question is, were you surprised about the extent of the fan support for Young Justice, and how did you feel when you, or how did you hear that season 3 was happening, and how did you feel when it happened?
I was not surprised, and the reason is because it's rare when you get on a show that you think should have an incredible fan base and doesn't, versus when you're on a show like Clone Wars that has an incredible fan base because it should.
Yeah.
Young Justice, I was like, whoa, did nobody see this? This is an anomaly. This is different. This is not your normal cartoon. And I would, you know, tell everybody, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm jumping up and down inside a jar, versus the power of the internet, which can then break that jar and reverberate, you know, across the nation and the world. I underestimated the power of the internet to make something like that a reality. I never thought that it wouldn't be that a lot of people would love this show. I thought they would love it in isolation or love it together but not be able to do anything about it. There's a powerlessness that even though we have the ability to connect to each other at this time, unprecedented in the history of our species, we seem to be powerless in a way that makes no sense when that is it's coupled with that connection. So I thought, wow, you know, here's another example of how connected we are, yet how powerless. What a dichotomy, and sad. But you have Netflix, who, for the first time, you can measure where and who and when is watching. I heard a story from a story from a story that at some point the Netflix people were talking about the views of this thing, and they were looking at the numbers and they were like, wow, that's some pretty amazing views for the quarter. Yeah, I mean, gosh, a lot of people are watching this in the last 90 days. And then the guy who keeps track of watching it goes, that's the last month. So, I mean, at that point, there's, I mean, I don't know if that's true or if that's just made up, but it definitely has a reverberating effect in the halls of the corporations who are responsible for managing the content. And at that point, when they see, wow, there's a lot of people who love this story, we should honor that with more content. I'm glad they made that decision, because they could have seen it and gone, well, a lot of people like this. That's cool. Let's make something like that.
Right.
But they didn't.
Exactly.
They were like, a lot of people love what these folks created, this very specific group of and they captured lightning in a bottle. Otherwise, that would not do this. You do not get people binging like crazy and watching this and then new people watching. It doesn't catch like a wildfire if it's lacking anything. And it's specific to this group of people. And so they did the smart thing. I mean, kudos to Warner Brothers. Huge, huge kudos to the Warner Brothers and the executives who were in charge of making the decisions, because they have a lot on their plate and a lot of things in front of them, and people give them a hard time. But remember, they have a 1,000-foot view of everything. And thanks to the internet and everybody's response, they zoomed that down to the 2-foot view. They're smart. They were enlightened, and they made the decision to bring back the content because it deserved that reward.
Yeah. Well, Caleb and I, we talk about the reason we started this podcast is because we needed therapy to talk about this show.
Right. And, you know, I don't know what's cheaper, buying a microphone or some time in the chair.
Yeah, time in the, I don't know, the microphone.
Sure.
But the idea that there was so much and so much depth going on, I had mentioned earlier about being kind of pleasantly browbeat into doing the podcast, because I was on social media saying, hey, by the way, did you notice this thing from, you know, the 1940s, you know, original Justice Society shown in the background of the scene, you know, and people were like, man, I want to know about all this. Like, this is nuts. Are you serious? And even after having watched the series, I don't even know, 30, 40 times now. And
there's not a word for the level of binge watching that you did. There's not a word.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, no. But we watch it right before we're doing our reviews, and we're still like, oh my God, Caleb, you have no idea what I just found out. Like, we just found out from Christopher Jones,
who is awesome,
the history
by the way.
Of the Watchtower, that it's actually a Green Lantern abandoned
outpost
that John and Hal dragged into orbit. Like, we didn't, I'm like, and then there's a freaking Green Lantern symbol right on the floor. I'm like, how did I miss that?
A million times. Right. And that's the thing is if you talk to Greg used to work for DC proper, right? So he has a lot of knowledge, and he has, you know, friends of his that he can refer to or make a quick call or send a quick email. And so the depth of knowledge that comes to play,
comes
to bear on this series will just make you just lose your crap. The way that they can honor things, you know, visually or in the storyline.
It makes you start a podcast.
It makes you, feel very appreciative.
Exactly. Well, our last question is, I think, our most important question. So be prepared.
Okay. I have my paper bag.
What, in your opinion, is a chicken whizzy?
What is a chicken whizzy? Well, I've been asked this on multiple occasions. And one time, what I thought it was fried chicken, like a chicken finger, right? So like a chicken winger with cheese whiz on it.
Oh, interesting. On or in?
Well, both. I don't know. I'm going to be non-committal there. I mean, of course, in would be the marketing genius that is the people who make food these days. So I'm going to go with in.
Right.
That it's a chicken finger with cheese whiz inside of it.
Chicken whizzy. Yeah. All right,
I always thought it had to do with cheese whiz and chicken fingers. I mean, I knew that. That just had to be what it was.
I think that's high a calorie, fair interpretation.
And high density. Yeah.
Exactly.
Very Wally.
Perfect Wally food.
Of course, right?
Fantastic.
I think someone needs to sell them now. Like if there's, I mean, think about how fast chicken whizzies would fly off the shelves. Just, you know, with Wally's face on. Oh, these are really good.
Absolutely.
I love chicken whizzies. You know. Are you going to eat that?
Become a superhero. Eat a chicken whizzy.
And that's it. Right. It's chicken whizzies. And then its tagline is, are you going to eat that?
Oh, my God. All right. Thanks so much.
Of course.
For spending time with us in the cave, Jason.
And my absolute love and devotion to all of the people who watch Young Justice and brought it back. I owe you a debt I cannot repay, even if I'm not on the show. Just in general, as a matter of principle, I just thank you so much, guys, for everything that you've done.
That's amazing. So where can people track you down here on Earth Prime
Twitter,
if they want to see more
pretty
of what
much.
You're doing?
I Twitter things out. That's not even a word. I'm old. I Twitter at people. I tweet, whatever. I tweet tweets that are tweeterific.
Tweetable?
I've completely lost all train of thought. So I send out 40 characters and hope that 140... That's usually where I put things out that I'm doing. So I'm on this feature film called Baja now where they dyed my hair bleach blonde because I'm a burned out surfer and put tattoos on me. So I'm doing that. I'm doing a video game that I can't quite announce that I'm in yet, which sucks. You know, the problem is a lot of the stuff I can't announce until it's a year after I've done it and then I can't even remember that I did it.
Right.
It's a bizarre, you know, anytime I talk to somebody like, what are you doing now? The stuff I can tell you about, okay, 1 year ago, let me look at my calendar. It sucks, but there you go. I'm on Powerpuff Girls. I play Silico, which is the bad guy who gets the best of the Powerpuff Girls. I'm trying to think of what's airing now that I was doing, so I'm hopeless. I need someone for publicity. Someone who just keeps my
That's
calendar from
PR.
A year ago and can bring it up at the flick of a switch.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks to everyone for sharing some time with us. You can find us also on the twits at the YJ Files on Facebook at www.facebook.com.
I'm sorry. I have a bad case of the twits. I don't know. I think I'm going to get some medicine and clear it up. The doctor said the twits are due to my age. I think it happens. It's like sciatica.
I can't even get,
but I'm
get
all
through
right.
our closing.
Oh, no. I play the Penguin on Telltale Games series, the Batman series, too.
Oh, I saw you getting interviewed for that.
Yeah, I played the Penguin. All right, well, this has been a climactic end. Thanks, Rich, man.
I didn't even think I could do our clothes.
No, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't let
you. You're very welcome.
Okay.
Everyone, Jason's awesome. Go listen to him do stuff.
Peace, love.
I have this complicated paragraph of things, and I just can't even focus.
No. Go to IMDb and then watch it after it's happened.
Right, exactly. All right, everyone, just keep in mind, you know the drill. Hashtag keep binging YJ. Hashtag buy YJ comics on Comixology. Pop over to our Patreon if you have a time. Give us a review. You know the drill.
And if you have bought your YJ comics, because we need you to buy those also. They're awesome. Please buy them in an interim before season 3 comes out. And if you buy one of those, you can come find me at a Comic-Con. I'll sign it, and then you'll have a souvenir.
You've been listening to Whelmed, the Young Justice Files podcast. Our computer is voiced by Madison Ray. Our theme was composed by Emily Mio. Our logo was created by Kevin Bates. Whelmed is a fan-made podcast and is not officially affiliated with DC Comics, DC Entertainment, Warner Brothers Animation, and any other owners of Young Justice or its related source material. As such, these companies have sole ownership of all symbols, images, names, logos, and proprietary material related to Young Justice. Original content of this podcast is ours under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening, and stay whelmed.